We are in the fourth week of a series that we have called How to Be Rich in What Matters Most. And we've been talking about not how to get rich. You can hear all about that on all different television programs or books. You can read about that. We're not going to talk about how to get rich, but how to be rich. Because if you've been here over the last few weeks, we started out with some good news and some bad news. And the good news was what? Help me, church, if you've been here. The good news is that we are rich. That's right. We are rich. We learned that if we make $37,000 at our house, we are in the top 4% of all income earners in the entire world. And if we're blessed enough to make $48,000 at our house, we are in the top 1% of income earners in the world. So that's ridiculous how rich we are when we put it in that kind of a perspective. So that's the good news, that we're rich. We have all kinds of rich people opportunities. Of course, along with that, we learned that the good news was that we are rich, and the bad news was also that we are rich. That's right, because with being rich comes a lot of different responsibilities and a lot of different things, problems that come along with that. Now, last week, I gave you the assignment to look for some of those rich people problems, right? Because we said that even though we're very blessed and we're rich, we sometimes complain about things that in reality are simply just rich people problems, and that could kind of change our perspective on things. And so some of you took me up on that, and like several of you did, and we're just show a few of those up here. So like the first one here, Heather Cooksey writes, "My heated seats are going out in my truck." Hashtag rich person problem, right? It's a common theme because Myra Rocky says, "Complaining that my brand new car doesn't have a heated steering wheel. I want it to be warm like my seat, which is heated." Hashtag whisper. I don't know if you saw Heather's hashtag also, cold bottom. All right, that was the hashtag cold bottom. All right, Hannah Kuntz says, "Complaining because I have to wait in line at Walmart while buying Christmas presents for my Operation Christmas Child box." All right, it's a problem, but it's a rich person problem. Kristen Whitey says, "Having a door-to-door salesman interrupt your nap." All right, it's a problem. It's a rich person problem. Lisa Cody says, "Stood in front of the closet trying to decide which warm coat to wear." Ah, yeah, that's a rich person problem. Mary Jo Bomer says, "Trying to decide whether to turn on the fireplace or move the thermostat up a degree." All right? Tough decisions, all right? Tough decisions, rich person problem. Rachel Guthrie speaks for itself. Don't you just hate it when you lose your XM signal? Right. Robin Burton says, "We're going to Starbucks and have to wait 20 minutes in a crowded shop for a hot drink because it was buy one, get one free." Problem? Yeah, rich person problem. All right. Sarah Cherry says, "My nice warm house is a complete mess. I don't know where to start cleaning." Hashtag rich person problem. Sarah Babbert says, "You know you're rich when your second car has trouble starting when it's cold. You could put it in the garage, but then you'd have to find a place to put all your extra stuff." Can anybody testify? All right. Rich person problem. And maybe my favorite one, Josh Cooksey says, "I just ate a steak that was too big for my belly." All right. Hashtag rich person problem. All right. Now we laugh at those, and those are rich person problems. They're more like rich person inconveniences, right? They're just things that happen that we get to have happen to us because we are so rich, right? But Jesus actually said that there were some bigger problems, some more dangerous problems, some more sinister problems that come along with the fact that we are so wealthy. In fact, Jesus said that being rich was the biggest spiritual obstacle that we would have to overcome. That it was the thing that we would have to guard against the most, because Jesus knew that money could be the primary competitor for God in our life, right? Jesus wants to have our heart. God wants to have our heart because our relationship with God is a trust relationship. It's a faith relationship. It's a heart-to-heart kind of relationship. And Jesus knew that the biggest competitor for our heart here on earth was our finances. And so that's why Jesus talked about it so much. And he warned us about things so much. He said that one of the biggest side effects, one of the biggest dangers with wealth, is that it would cause us to put our hope and our trust in our wealth. Because money will promise things that only God can provide. Money will promise happiness, right? We think that if we just have this enough money, then we can get that thing, like that Xbox. Right, Chase? Where are you? All right? Or that thing, all right, that's going to make us happy, all right? And we don't, you know, for us as older people, it's not the Xbox anymore. It's something different. But we think we've got that one thing. If we just get that, then we'll be happy, right? But as we learn, money is deceitful. It'll lie to us and make us think that if we just get that one more thing, we'll be happy. But when in reality, when we get that one more thing, if we weren't happy before, we still aren't going to be. It also promises, money promises security, right? If we just have enough, then we won't have to worry about what happens in the future. But if you've ever lost money in the stock market, or if you've ever had things go wrong financially, you know how uncertain riches can be. And so Paul writes, don't put your hope in riches, which are so uncertain. And Jesus said that they are so deceitful, right? Because they'll just flat lie to you, all right? And so all we've kind of come all along with this saying that we've been saying over and over again as we've reminded ourselves how we are going to think about our wealth. And it started this way. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. I will not trust in riches, but in Him who richly provides. Because I have more, I will do more and give more. All right? And that's kind of where we stopped. And let's just all say that together, all right? Let's say that together. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. I will not trust in riches, but in Him who richly provides. Because I have more, I will do more and give more. All right? Because we want to be rich well. All right? We want to be good at it. All right? I don't want you to be average rich people. I don't want us to be like normal Americans. All right? As we talked about last week, I don't want us to be poor in good deeds. I don't even want us to be middle class in good deeds or being rich. I want us to be rich at being rich. I want us to be good at it. And so just as we have the last few weeks, we're going to be looking at a few verses that a guy named Paul wrote to a guy named Timothy to instruct people who are rich how to be rich well. Okay? Because Paul knew, even in that day, in the first century, most of the people who were rich weren't very good at it. All right? You probably seen the same thing in your life, that most of the people you know that are rich aren't very good about it. And so we want to be good at it. And this is what Timothy what Paul writes to Timothy to tell us how to be good at it. All right, he says this. Command those who are rich in this present world. Okay? And then we stop right there because the discerning listener will say, wait a minute, Paul, those who are rich in this present world, are you saying there's some kind of another world? Are you saying there's another world out there? To which Paul would say, yes, right? And in fact, 97% of Americans also believe that there's something after this life, all right? Most of us believe in a thing called heaven or something beyond this life. And as we're going to see, Paul tells us and Jesus tells us that what we do here affects what happens there in that life. So Paul says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. In this way, if they do this, if rich people do this, if they're rich in good deeds, if they're always generous and willing to share, in this way, if they don't trust in their riches, but they put their hope in God, in this way, they will actually lay up treasures, lay up a foundation for the life to come. In this way, they will take hold of the life that is truly life. Paul says, how we live here affects things there. Okay? How we live here affects things there. We've been blessed, Paul would say. We have been blessed by God, so don't miss the opportunity. Don't miss the incredible opportunity that you've been given because of your blessing to not only affect things here in this life, but in some way in God's economy to actually affect things in the life to come, in heaven, in God's kingdom. How we live here affects things there. Because Jesus talked about things, about money a lot, and he almost always linked money with eternity. All right, you can check it out. Every time if you read what Jesus talking about money, almost always there's a link there to eternity, because Jesus knew that if we viewed our money through the lens of eternity, if you're taking notes, it's kind of your first one there, viewing money through the lens of eternity will loosen our grip on it and loosen its grip on us. Okay? If we view our money, our finances, our resources, our wealth, what God has blessed us with, if we view it with an eye on the big picture, okay? If we view it with an eye toward eternity, on God's big picture, then that will have the effect of loosening our grip on it so we can live more with an open hand, and that will allow money to lose its grip on us so that we are no longer controlled and no longer love and serve money, as we talked about a couple weeks ago. And if we do all that, it says we will take hold of the life that is truly life. If we begin to view our money and our wealth through the lens of eternity, if we begin to be generous, if we begin to be rich in good deeds, then we will begin to take hold of the life that is truly life. The reality is, some of you here today are living counterfeit lives. You're not living life that is truly life, as Jesus would describe it, as He came to give to us. Because this whole idea and this whole area of finances have gotten out of whack in your life, you are not living the full and the true life that Jesus came for you to give. The life that comes with peace. You may have money in the bank, but there's no peace in your heart because you are looking at your finances as your source of happiness. And you're looking at finances as your source of security. Paul said, if you want the life that is truly life, the life that Jesus came to give, then there's a way to go about that. And so, now that we've recognized that we're rich, today I would just want to give one more encouragement of how to be rich well. And so we're going to look at two things that Jesus said, all right, about wealth and about money and about how it tied into eternity, all right? And we're going to first look at a negative example, all right? So we're first going to look at how to be rich in the wrong way, all right? And then we're going to turn around and look at how to be rich in the right way, okay? So in your blank there, we're first going to look at a story Jesus told in Luke chapter 12. So if you've got your Bibles, you can turn to Luke 12. Otherwise, it'll be up on the screen for you. We're going to look at a story that Jesus told that He made up about a man that did it wrong. So we're going to look first at how to be rich in the wrong way. This is a parable that Jesus told. Maybe you've heard that word if you've been around church. Parables are simply a made-up story to make a point, okay? In all of Jesus' parables, somebody is God and somebody is you. Okay, it's always important to know which is which, all right, generally speaking, but especially in his story. Sometimes it's obvious in his stories which one is God, which one is you. Sometimes it's not always obvious. Today is more obvious. Okay, here's how he says. The ground of a certain rich man. And of course, several weeks ago, we would have read right over this and think this has nothing to do with us because why? We're not rich. It's that other guy that's rich. We know somebody that's rich. We've got a rich uncle. We've got a rich neighbor, but we're not rich. But now we realize that we are rich. And so we realize that he's in fact, this might be talking to us. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. In other words, he had a good year, all right? Bumper crop. Things are good, all right? He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Now, is that a problem? Yeah, that's a problem. What kind of problem is it? That's a rich person problem, right? He's got so much crops, right? He doesn't know what to do with them, all right? He says, I've got such a big harvest. What am I going to do with my crops? I've got no place to put them. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. That's a good idea. And then there I will store my surplus grain. I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. So Jesus is telling a story here of a rich guy that gets richer, right? He had extra, and now he's got extra extra, okay? And so he came up with a plan that seems reasonable, seems logical. And if the story were to stop there, Jesus' hearers in the first century and we today would think, this is a great story about how to save for the future, right? This is a great story about what you should do when you've got all kinds of extra. You should save it for the future. Because especially in the first century, we kind of get into that today too, they thought in the first century that wealth was a sign of God's blessing. And if you didn't have very much wealth, that means God didn't love you very much, okay? And so they thought this is the hero of the story, all right? He's a rich guy. He got richer. He had extra. Now he's got extra, extra. He's putting it back for the future. He's taking life easy. This is a man fully blessed by God, okay? However, that guy made a significant mistake and a serious mistake. His assumption was that everything that God had blessed him with was for his consumption. His assumption was that everything that God had given him was for him. So Jesus continues the story. Verse 20. But God said to him, you fool. God said to him, you fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? God said, you fool. Really? Why was the man a fool? God says, because tonight you're going to die. And are you sure the guy is going to say, but I can't die. I got money in the bank, right? I got plans. I got a trip to Disney World coming up, right? Christmas, I got big stuff planned. I can't die. I've still got money. I can't die. And Jesus said, God will tell that person, you fool, because tonight you will die. Who will get what you've saved for yourself? He asked the question. What's the answer? Who will get what he saved for himself? Someone else, right? Not because he was generous, but because he was dead. All right? So this is a key point. All right? We don't get credit for what we leave. We only get credit for what we give. All right? We don't get credit for what we leave. We only get credit for what we give. Think about it. Everybody leaves the same amount. All. Right? Everybody leaves the same amount. All of it. Okay? So why would we get credit for that? Everybody's going to leave all of it. Okay? We only get credit for what we, in God's economy, we only get credit for what we give, not for what we leave. And so Jesus continues on, very important verse. He says, this is how it will be. This idea of total loss of everything, total loss of any chance of doing good in this world, right? This is how it will be, a total loss of everything for whoever, stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. This is how it will be, a total loss. No chance to do good in this world. No chance for it to matter in eternity. This is how it will be, a total loss. Jesus says, if we're not generous, we run the risk of total loss. Let's think about this for just a minute. That's how to be rich in the wrong way, right? This man was rich in the wrong way. He assumed, and this is your blank, he assumed that everything that was placed in his hand was for him to consume. Right? He assumed that everything God blessed him with was for his consumption. He assumed that everything he had was for him to consume. 2 Corinthians 9:11 says that God has in fact made us rich in every way so that we can be generous when? On every occasion. Right? The reality is God has made us rich so that we can be generous. He has placed extra in our hand, not so that we can build a bigger place to store it, but so that we can be freely to give it to others, to be generous on every occasion. So think about this. God was not angry with the man. He did not call the man a fool because he was rich. All right? Who gave the man his wealth? God did. All right? God gave him his wealth. The Bible tells us that wealth is a blessing from God, that everything we have is a gift from God's hand. God was not angry with him or call him a fool because he was rich. God called him a fool because he was rich in the wrong way. God called him a fool because he was not rich in what matters most. God called him a fool because he thought everything that he had was for him. God called him a fool because he was not rich toward God. He was not rich in what matters most. The good news is there's a way that we can be rich toward God. There's a way that we can be rich in a good way. And that's kind of the last line of our key thought. All right. We begin. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm what? I'm rich. I will not trust in riches, but in Him who richly provides. Because I have more, I will do more and give more. I will be rich toward God. All right. That's your blanks. I will be rich toward God. What does that mean to be rich toward God? Well, Jesus explained it, and to fill in your blanks, Jesus explained it this way. He said to be rich toward God, or Roman numeral 2 there, how to be rich in the right way as opposed to the wrong way. How to be rich in the right way, how to be rich toward God means to do good for those who can't or won't do good for you. Right? To do good for those who can't or won't do good for you. Jesus said that's what it meant to be rich toward God. Here's how he said it in Matthew chapter 25. He said, and this whole idea of being rich toward God was kind of a new concept, right? To be rich toward Zeus in that day in the first century was to mean you brought a big offering to Zeus's temple, right? In hopes that Zeus would then show favor on you and do good for you. Jesus kind of turned the tables. He said to be rich toward God means to do good for those who can't or won't do good for you. To do good for those people who God created. Here's what he said in Matthew 25. This is a story many of you have heard of before. Jesus was asked how it would be like at the end of the world. All right, and Jesus, this is his big explanation of what things are going to be like and what God is going to use to determine who goes where. He said this, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Sorry. All right, so he's going to separate out, all right? So this is God in the final judgment, and you guys are cut right down the middle, all right? So you're in. Sorry, you're out. All right, so Jesus said, all right, it's going to be this way, all right? God's going to put everybody all together in the whole world. He's going to divide them all out, some on this side, some on this side, all right? What's going to be that deciding factor? What's going to be the determining factor? This is what he said. He said, Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you are who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. In other words, welcome to heaven, all right? Do not pass go, do not collect $200, you get to go to heaven. And this is what he says, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. All right? And so this is this big dissertation. He's saying, if you did good to the people who can't or won't do good for you, then you get to go to heaven. And now this, you may have read through this before, and you may have never thought about it this way. But to me, this shows that maybe there'll be no teenagers in heaven. All right? Sorry, but you'll understand what I mean in just a second. All right? Because, listen to the response of this. Listen to the response. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you and thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in or need clothing and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison or go to visit me? Do you get the idea of what's happening here? Jesus is saying, you guys get to go to heaven. All right. And teenagers would be going, I have no idea what you're talking about, hungry, thirsty, but thanks. I'm in. See ya. All right. Let's party. Right. That's what you'd say. We're in heaven. All right. But these people said, they're arguing. They're just like, yeah, okay, but when did we do any of that stuff? Right? Teenagers would never make that mistake. Right? You would never, ever question. You get to go to heaven, you're in, right? You're not asking questions, you're in, all right? Jesus said, these people are going to ask that, and here's his reply. The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Being rich toward God, being rich in the right way, being rich in what matters most, is all about doing good for those who can't or won't do good for you. The early church took this incredibly seriously. In fact, it's the reason that they survived the first century at all. Think about it. All right, there's this ragtag group of people in the first century. How did they even survive? All right, did they have wealth? Not really, not comparatively. Did they have political influence? Zero. All right. Did they have social influence? No. You think, well, it was their theology. It was what they believed. People thought they were crazy when they said somebody came back from the dead. All right. So it wasn't what they believed. Their thing that set them apart was this idea that they looked after and they did for people who couldn't or wouldn't do good for them. You see, in the first century Rome, they were used to this idea of generosity, but the word they used was liberalitas, right? That's a Latin word, and what it meant in their day was that you do good for somebody who can return the favor to you, all right? You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, okay? In fact, that was the whole concept of generousness in that day. In fact, if you were smart, you would go around looking for the richest person you could find and do something nice for them. Why? Because then they owe you, all right? And the thing that they could do nice for you would be better than the thing that you did nice for them, all right? But they would have to do it because they owed you, all right? And that was the whole idea of what generosity meant in the first century, that you did for people that could do for you. And Jesus came and he turned that upside down. And he said, that's not how it works in my kingdom. He said, in my kingdom, if you want to be rich toward God, if you want to be rich toward me, you will do good for those who can't or won't do good for them, do good back to you. It explains why there's so much written in the Bible, in the New Testament particularly, about taking care of widows and orphans. All right? Because in that day, widows and orphans had nothing at all to give. And so therefore, nobody ever did anything for them because they could not possibly return the favor. And Jesus said, no, those are the people that if you help them, if you serve them, it will be it just as if you are doing it for me. And that turned the whole world upside down. It changed the flow of history. And people will tell it to you wrong and that Christianity represses women and puts women down. But Christianity was the best thing in history that ever happened for women and children. Why? Because they had in that time when they had nothing that they could offer or could give back. And Jesus said, do good for people. Protect people that can't protect or that can't help you back. Do good to those. Be generous to those who can never, ever return the favor. And then you will be rich in my kingdom. Those early Christians, like I said, they took it seriously. Women and children were cared for in the church like nowhere else. In the second and third century Rome, there were two big plagues that happened in Rome, right? In one of them, in the third century, up to 5,000 people died per day just in the city of Rome, all right? Major plague. And if you read the history books, everybody, doctors, the pagan doctors, they all fled the city. Why? Because they didn't want to get the plague and die. Who stayed? The Christians stayed. The Christians stayed at risk of their own life. Some of them got the plague, some of them died. But in doing so, they illustrated more than words could ever say, that there was something more important than physical life and death, that there was something more important than doing something for somebody who could do something back for you. They knew that those people they were helping with the plague weren't going to be able to do anything back to them. They were going to die, right? But because they were generous, because they did for people who could not do for them, a plague that looked like it was going to wipe out that whole part of the world actually was a springboard for the growth of Christianity, because Christians took Jesus' command seriously. Shouldn't surprise you then that a lot of the doctors and the nurses that are running toward Africa now and the plague there, the Ebola, are Christian people, and they're motivated by their faith because they know that, yes, those people may be going to die, but they are made in the image of God, and that all people are equal in that way. And because people who are followers of Christ realize that to be rich in God's kingdom means doing good for those that can't or won't do good for you. So what does that mean for us? Okay, hopefully we won't get the plague like that here. Hopefully it will kind of stay away. But what does that mean for us? I don't know. It could mean lots of different things, all right? Could mean that you teenagers babysit for that single mom down the street, all right, and don't charge her for it, and help clean up the house while you're there. Wow, that's crazy, all right? Or it could mean for us, all right, to do the same thing. Man, if you're taking your kids to the ball game, that single mom, ask if you could take her kids as well. Could be different things, all right? Could be going to, I was going to say rake the leaves of the elderly couple down the street, but we're past leaves, we're out of snow already, all right? Even though we're not Thanksgiving, you could shovel the snow, right, for someone who's not able to do that. I don't know what it means. Those are a couple of examples. I don't even want to list very many examples because you'll think, well, no, it wasn't on that list. Again, Paul said, we were made rich so that we could be generous on every occasion. I don't know what occasion you're going to come up with today. I don't know what occasion will be presented to you. But to be rich in God's kingdom means that we're going to be rich on every occasion, right? We're going to be generous on every occasion so that whatever presents yourself, you're going to be willing to help, especially for those who can't or won't do good for you. Because the reality is, no strings attached generosity is almost irresistible, right? And we do it because we believe it's a reflection of what Jesus has already done for us, that he gave to us when we had nothing to offer him. He gave and he loved to us. Can you imagine if we just did this part right? Can you imagine what would happen in our community if just us, our group of people, our little group here at Ellisville Christian Church, what would happen if we got this part right? If we could be known as the early church was, not by our theology as much, but just by the fact that we were the most compassionate, most generous people that there were around. The people might say, I don't know what they believe. I don't even know if I believe what they believe, but those are the most generous. Those are the most compassionate people I've ever seen. And then that would give us an opportunity to tell them about our compassionate and generous God and what he has done for us and what his grace has done for us. Can you imagine what would happen if we just got this part right? Church, that's the kind of church I want us to be. I want us to be a kind of a church who, when we're asked to donate 250 cans of pork and beans to the Thanksgiving dinner baskets that the mission gives away, that we give over 500 cans of pork and beans, which is what you did, church, all right, at last count, all right? I want us to be that kind of a church. I want us to be the kind of church that sees that angel tree out there in the lobby and sees that there were 20 angels on there this morning, and by the time that we leave here, they're all going to be all gone. And so we've got to put more on there for the next week. And then next week, they'll be all gone, and we have to put more on there. I want us to be that kind of a church that doesn't just do 10 or 20 angels, but there's 40 or 50, or I don't even know how many angels that we're going to do. I want us to be that kind of a church that when we give our offering here in just a little bit, our special offering for the Boys and Girls Club, and somebody asks, what's that for? It's not earmarked, all right? It's that they're a community organization. They're doing good in the community. They're helping people. They charge kids $20 a year. Right? $20 a year to come and be a part of their program. So they need all kinds of resources. If you ever walk through their building, you will not question, what do they need money for? All right? you name it, they need it, all right? And so we're going to be so generous. I'm so excited about this. I can't even tell you. I'm kind of giddy inside about what that's going to be like. And I'm so excited in a couple of weeks to be able to tell you what it is we did and how much we gave. Because we're going to be a church that doesn't trust in riches. We understand that God has blessed us and that we are rich. And we're not going to put our trust and our hope in riches, but in Him who richly blesses. Because we have more, we're going to do more and we're going to give more. We're going to be known for our compassion. We're going to be known for our generosity. And the word and the name and the fame, not of us is going to spread, but of our Savior is going to spread. Because people are going to ask, what in the world are you guys doing over there? And then we have a chance to tell them about our incredible God who is so good and compassionate and generous to us. Paul said it like this: command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. And church, that's what I want for you. I want you to take hold of the life that is truly life. Right? I don't want you to live lives of turmoil, especially in regards to your financial situation. I want you to live a life that is truly life, a life with peace and with joy and contentment. I want us to be good at the being rich because God has blessed us in so many ways. I want us to be good, generous on all occasions. And again, if you doubt our motives or whatever, I've still got these papers up here from last week. It's got lots of the three different churches locally. If you doubt our motives or whatever, pick one of these up and give to them. Because the reality is, once we start looking at our wealth through the lens of eternity, it loosens our grip on our money. It allows us to be more open-handed, and it loosens the grip that our money has on us. When we begin to look at our finances through God's big picture and realize what good He could do with it in the world. And in fact, even if you look at it from a selfish perspective, right? Because He said if you want to lay up a rich foundation for yourself in the next world, then be generous in this world. So you could even look at it selfishly and think, I want things great in the future world, so I'm going to be generous now, right? Just imagine what good could be done in the world. Here's the thing, I'll make you a promise, all right? You will never miss the money you give to meet a need of someone else. You'll never miss it, all right? The money you will miss, the money you waste, the money you spend poorly on things you don't need, the money you loan to your brother-in-law, all right? That's the money you'll miss, all right? You will never miss the money that you give to meet a need of another. Right? Because when we do that, we are most closely representing the heart of God, and our heart will change. Giving redirects our heart in a way that nothing else does. When we give and we are a model, or we try to be like our Heavenly Father and give to those who can't or won't give to us, something changes within us. And when something changes within us, then something can change with us together as a body. And when that happens, we can change this community. Who knows, the world. It happened once before. It could happen again. The reality is God has blessed us with more than we need. What are we? We are rich. We're not going to trust in riches. We're going to trust in Him who richly provides. Because He has given us more. We will do more. And we will give more. Church, we are going to be rich toward God. And it's going to be exciting.